This is James Gillen. I'm your host. We've got another great show tonight. We've got Alfred Weber, and he's got some amazing things going on. I mean, I could talk for 3 hours on some of his work and what he's done. He's a friend of Vicetti, and I just want to bring him on the show because there's so many things going on. If you don't know who Alfred is, just go to exopolitics.com, and you can find out more about Alfred. But, you know, he's a judge at the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal. He's working on peace treaties. He has Exo University going on. There's so many different things, and we're going to talk about all of that tonight. So without any further ado, I want to welcome Alfred to the show. Alfred, are you with us?
Yes, James. Yeah. Thank you very much for having me on. And I really enjoy connecting back up with you and connecting back up with the energy at Mount Adams. That's a really powerful portal and place. And it's a place that people often ask me whether I've ever had UFO encounters. And until I went to Iseti and we had those sky watches, even though in all my years of writing UFO books and writing the exopolitics books and doing the Carter White House and all of that, I never really had real UFO encounters. So I finally now can say, yeah, I have had UFO encounters and I've seen UFOs, and they're at the foot of Mount Adams and it's at the Iseti Ranch. So that's what I always say.
That's good. You know, I made a list of all the people that have come here, and really it's a list of who's who of international speakers that have come to the ranch. And so many of them have come back just with their minds blown and had their own personal experience. I find it odd, though, that we're still being censored in many arenas, even with the long list of notable people, you know, like yourself and so many others. You know, even, you know, Bob Dean was here and had a mind-blowing experience. So, you know, with this huge list of people with thousands and thousands of witnesses, one would think that with that much evidence that, you know, people would let it go and start, you know, getting on the bandwagon here. But, I mean, that's a whole nother story. But anyway, I wanted to talk about, you've got a new initiative out there. You're working on this peace treaty.
Yeah, you know, it really came about because a colleague of mine contacted me and told me that Dr. Mehran Keshi, an Iranian scientist who has developed many different technologies based on the electromagnetic field, i.e. the ability to convert air into water or food, the ability to have anti-gravitational cars, the ability to have space travel. And I imagine that all of these are at the theoretical level still, but he's had breakthroughs in terms of the theory. And he's a very visionary man. When he came here to Canada, he was held prisoner illegally for 11 days at a prison 2 miles from the Toronto airport. And they told him that if he ever reported this to the press, he would be killed. And what they did is they were trying to steal his technology. He had done nothing wrong, and he was visiting his sister, who was a Canadian citizen. And apparently here in Canada, which is, I think, one of the leading New World Order countries. I mean, basically, it is New World Order countries hiding behind the shills of, quote, the good Canadian.
Yeah.
apparently he told me that when scientists come into Canada with secrets, like alternative scientists who are working on new energy or things like this, they are held incommunicado in these jails and told that if they talk, if they talk to the world press, they or their families will be killed and their technology is stolen. You know, their computers and their hard drives are emptied. And meantime, Canada is one of the world's centers for money laundering for Dope Inc., for all of the drug money that comes out of the Golden Triangle in Asia. That's why the Canadian banks are so healthy right now. It's basically drug money. This is a genocidal country that has genocided its aboriginals beyond anything and still do, way beyond even the ongoing genocide that's happening in the States against the Native Americans. Mm-hmm. I did an interview with him, which mysteriously I put it up and you could hear me fine, but all of a sudden you couldn't hear him. There was like this huge hum. So I had to take that interview down because I don't know what it is about the internet, but people, unless you know, as soon as they have a hum, they like there's this sector of people that are not into resisting the New World Order, but rather into demanding New World Order, i.e. CNN quality video, and not into understanding at all that the New World Order may have interfered with the video quality.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there were just too many negative comments going on that I took that video down. But Keshi's main message was this. Look, we're now at humanity is now preparing to travel in space. And humanity is now getting ready to join the universal community. And this is something that you, James, a message that you've been giving out and that we've all been giving out now for decades. But humanity first needs to find peace here. And that's what we need to do. Now, this new World Peace Treaty, it's actually very interesting because it's signed initially at the personal level. And that is that personally, you agree to lay down tools of aggression and war, and you agree not to become involved in or incite war. Now, by war, we mean what the permanent war economy and the bloodline bankers have as an industrial activity, i.e., you know, World War One, World War Two, what they're trying to get off the ground now, World War Three, or, you know, Afghanistan, Iraq, you know, that kind of war, civil war. And you pledge never to use the tools of war on the planet or in space, and to swear with it with your body and soul. So this is like making a commitment at the personal level not to immerse yourself in war. And then, but the World Peace Treaty, it's all one sentence, but it can be done also by people in the inside the governments, either at the city council level, at the state legislator level, or at the national level, or at the ambassador level, either personally or on behalf of their nation. So this is really about getting people to think about peace. Now, there is what I have found since I kind of began to get behind this concept, because the U.S. economy, since the 50s, since the late 40s, when they brought out the Rockefeller Report, has been based on what they call, the defense industries. Well, the defense industries, meaning the war industries. So there's a huge amount of work, of employment, that's based on making weapons of war. Weapons to kill people, to destroy people, to kill civilians, to knock the intestines out of children. You know, these mines, these bullets, these, you know, things that, I mean, you know, as a war crimes judge who has found a U.S. president, George W. Bush, and his cabinet on war crimes after a $5 million trial process in which there was huge. I mean, we saw witnesses who had been tortured in Abu Ghraib, witnesses who had been tortured in Iraq, witnesses who had been tortured in Guantanamo. These are not Taliban. These were women civilians. Mm-hmm. So the United States has embarked on a policy of torturing civilians, and there's 1 to 2 million Iraqis that have been killed. They've been killed.
Yeah.
Civilians.
Yeah.
This is genocide that the United States nation has engaged in. I mean, I'm talking about that as a judge that has viewed an enormous amount of evidence. And and that's what this nation's economy is based on. You know, people say, oh, you know, great for jobs. Yeah. Well, what are you building? You know, like last night on Seattle PBS, I turned on the TV and there was a half hour program that was being produced by Jeff Greenfield, who was a fellow law school graduate of mine. And he was talking about a jobs program down in Alabama. So I said, okay, I'll look at it. Well, what was it? It was building warships, you know, and building these, building these literal warships, meaning that they went along the coast and just destroyed everything along the coast. Fishermen, you know, these local fishermen that have fished that way for centuries, they just tore them up. Why? Because, they might be enemy. They might be this or that. That is something that the United States, ever since Vietnam or before, I mean, the United States abroad has just become like this genocidal destroyer. So with bases in, 175 countries? I mean, 175 military bases overseas. So I began to see, and knowing what I knew about the Rockefeller Report, where the prime architect of it was Henry Kissinger, just after the war, and basically they said, this was to brainwash the American public into saying, well, it's really good to have an American empire and to have all of these military bases because we're bringing peace to the world. Well, what it means is that you're bringing war to the world. So this World Peace Treaty is really quite something. And what I've noticed just from the online comments of doing this is that people either jump one way or the other. You get some people that go, oh my God, what? This is a huge vision. I can see that the first step is to get all the people of the world that really get into, they just say, no, we can't have war as an industrial activity of the permanent war economy of the bloodline bankers to just, you know, where they control both sides of the war, which is what happened from World War I forward. And that's the technology that they use, but we're just not going to participate. But then there's another part that really get angry and fearful that war and violence is going to be taken away. And they say, that's never going to happen. And they really get verbally violent and fearful. So for me, it's been a great learning experience. Now, if people want to you know, actually do this for themselves, you can sign the World Peace Treaty online. And I put a link up at exopolitics.com. And there's a short video there. It's a 3-minute video if you want to watch a little bit. And there's a link to Dr. Keshi's webpage where he puts four PDF documents that go into it, you know, the whole theory behind it. But it's just, what has been your experience when you bring up peace around, you know, individuals or around organizations, James?
Right. It's a double-edged sword. It's pretty interesting because some of the what I've been trying to get people to do is just get into critical thinking and get out of their emotional, you know, they're swayed all over the place emotionally by the media and all these events, false flag events and things like that. And I just try to get them to think about this. You know, we really don't have a defense department. We have an offense department, and we have a massive war industry that they think it's okay because it creates jobs, but the bottom line, you're still murdering and torturing and killing people, you know, women and children as well. And even with the drone strikes, I mean, you see a wedding that's getting hit by these drones, you know, and all these innocent children are being just, you know, blown to pieces, having their jaws torn off. And, you know, not to get graphic about this, but then we have our leader crying a tear because some kids got supposedly killed, you know, at Sandy Hook. We don't even know the real story on that. That story is so full of holes. I don't even want to go there. That's a whole show in itself. But, you know, none of this makes any sense whatsoever. It's the biggest doublespeak program I've ever seen. When you watch the media and you watch what politicians are saying, and then you look at what they're doing, and I'm being attacked constantly by people that are telling me that our leader, you know, Obama, is the new Messiah, and he talks daily with Jesus and Saint Germain and things of that nature in the New Age community. And I go, well, you know, wait a second, the Patriot Act is still there, the NDAA Act, you know, where you can be grabbed anywhere, anytime, you know, detained indefinitely. You sign that into position, you know, the wars have escalated. I mean, I can go on and on with all the promises that were broken, but I said, at what point does he put his white hat on? I'm waiting, you know, I'm hearing him saying one thing and watch him do the exact opposite, and I'm waiting for that white hat to go on. And that's what I've been getting when I said, you know, all you have to do is look at universal principles that are necessary for a healthy society and environment, like universal peace, brother, sisterly love, individual freedom and prosperity for everybody, the basics, and then apply that to our leadership. And it's really that simple. You can't cry a tear for children in one country and then, you know, massacre them in another. You know, it's just things like that, just base critical. You can't say this is a peace effort and then be funneling tons of money and arms and everything into Al-Qaeda. And then the same thing on the radio saying Al-Qaeda is going to attack, you know, America any day now. To me, it's just like crazy making. When you watch what's going on, I go, what happened to critical thinking, you know, with this whole process?
Yeah. This is kind of prophesized that this era would come, and that many people would be enmeshed in, and would enmesh themselves in, you know, whatever you want to call it, the New World Order, the Age of Antichrist, all of that. We've also been focusing on that level. I like to call it upper theater. And this is where you have the high archetypal figures of the New World Order. And by the New World Order, I mean this global, political, and I would call it anti-source movement that has been developed by the bloodline elites, by the monarchies, and by the existing power matrix over centuries, and is now coming to a culmination. And its basic message is they are God, and they represent Source and God. So, for example, what we found is that there, it looks like there are three major archetypes, archetypal figures in upper theater. I call them the Pope, the Queen, and the Obama, and that is the Vatican. The Queen is the British Crown, which is now, it looks like it's maneuvering to bring Prince William in as the next king, who actually, on deep analysis, and you can go to exopolitics.com, looks like he's being groomed to be the first world, New World Order king, because he's got the Rothschild bloodlines on both sides there. And he sort of satisfies all the requirements of the protocols of the Elders of Zion, which is actually a plan that's masquerading as a fraud. Westminster Hall in London, which is like one of the holy sanctuaries of the New World Order, only three people have spoken there, and that's the Pope, the Queen, Elizabeth Windsor, and the Obama. Barack Obama actually spoke there on May 25th, 2011. And so he should have lost the past election in the U.S. by all rights. And in fact, 10 days before the election, his approval rating dropped precipitously from 54% or so down to 53%, down to 46%. And no sitting U.S. president had ever been reelected with an approval rating of less than 50%. So at that point, they brought in the HAARP triggered Hurricane Sandy. This was 10 days prior to the election. At that point, he jumped into commander-in-chief role, and his approval rating went back up above 50%, and he won. And they used a HAARP hurricane at the beginning of the campaign as a bookend with Hurricane Isaac that they steered directly into the Republican convention in Tampa, thereby canceling the first day of the Republican convention and so that they wouldn't get a bounce. Now, I'm not giving a brief for the Democrats or the Republicans because they're both New World Order entities at this point, but I'm just showing that the HAARP controllers, there's 17 HAARP facilities around the world, the HAARP controllers, who are basically the British and Dutch monarchies and the City of London banking bloodlines, there's about 13 families that are led by the Rothschilds, they control the HAARP, and they use it as to essentially hold mankind hostage. But Satoru, his real name is Barry Satoru. And this whole thing about Barack Obama is a fake. He's not related to a Kenyan civil servant named Barack Obama Sr., who was assassinated by the CIA in a fake auto accident in Kenya in 1982. And Barack Obama in 1982 came to British Columbia, to a small town here in BC, to a court there, and changed his name from a cover name, Barack Ubaid, that he was using as a CIA agent in Pakistan, to Barack Obama, and took on the name there. So we have a Manchurian candidate who's part of the CIA crime gang and a lifelong CIA asset, as were his mother and his two grandparents on the maternal side, as a president. This is a totally fake thing. So that's basically what's going on. And you have entire nations, for example, here in Canada, people, vast majority of the country, still worships the British monarchy and the Queen, and worship worship Prince William and Kate, literally, beyond what anybody in the United States would even imagine. And that's, you know, and it's the same thing as those people in the U.S. who worship Barack Obama. That's the same thing as worshiping the beast. And I'm bringing in that kind of text because this era has been prophesied.
Well, it definitely has. And we've all heard, you know, the Lakota prophecies. They talk about the beast, you know, that's 2,000 miles wide. And that represents the length of as it's going to be doing its thing, you know. And they said it's all consuming, all dominating. It wants to just control and consume everything and everyone. And they said right at the end, when you think there's no hope left, the beast consumes itself. And then we start the, you know, the 1,000 years of peace and the star nations return. But, you know, knowing that, I'm looking at what's unfolding here. And it is that the banksters have become this massive parasite and predator that is unsustainable. You just can't feed anymore. It's eating itself out of house and home, you know, with these pyramid schemes and everything else. And it is going to implode on itself. And, it just seems that's where everything is going, you know, in that direction. And it has to. I mean, the present day society really needs to go through a massive transformation or a total collapse, and something new needs to take its place, you know, one or the other. But it's just got to go.
Yeah. So do you have any sense of how long this phase is going to last? Some people say to 2015, 2016, you know, and then this whole New World Order phase is like that's where it's really going to collapse, and we're going to start going into that new era. Do you have any sense at all?
I think it's going to happen before. My gut feeling is that it's going to be undeniable what's going on before summer. That it is imploding on itself. We're talking about this summer, and it might be a continuous process, but I think it's going to happen much faster than people think, only because of the information I've been getting about the grids, about the Archon grid or the grid of tyranny, whatever you want to call it, that's been at play here on the planet. It's just getting torn apart right now and breaking up and cleaned up, and the astral levels are being cleaned up, and there's basically like wars going on other dimensions and other levels. That's all being cleaned up, and that's something that's being seen around the world right now. That people are seeing massive flashes in the sky, and they're seeing light ships and darker ships, like dark triangle ships and things like that are just vanishing. You know, in the presence of these light ships, there'll be a big flash and then the other ship just vanishes. And Linda Moulton Howe just did a whole story on that with all these witnesses that have been observing this. But that's one thing I want to ask you too. I don't know if you've heard about this, but last night we saw a massive flash here. And it was just amazing in the sky. I didn't hear anything after it. Like a rumbling or a boom or anything else, but you know, other people are hearing they'll see a big flash of light, and then they'll see these dark ships cruising around, and then a massive flash of light, and then the ship's gone. So they might just be sending them into another dimension or just dematerializing them altogether. I don't know how they're doing it, but this old grid and those who are working with it and those who are in the dark technologies, the control technologies, that whole thing, I think, is coming to an end.
Yeah. Well, you know, to bring it back to what you were talking about at the beginning of the program, and that is the the gatekeepers in the whole ET UFO area, my experience is that they are working with the dark side, and that the last thing that they want is the real thing. And that, so that anybody that brings forth the real thing in terms of real experience of real ET, real UFO, real interdimensional connection, we get frozen out.
Because
that all of these conferences are about that. It's about continuing to sell the public memes and keeping them, trying to keep the public from the real thing. And, that is my experience. And even this year, I experienced one of these individuals on a project that I co-authored. He got $1 million for it. And now he took it away and he's putting on a show with memes. He's going to make a movie for $1 million out of a conference of just memes. You know, it's just all these old people spouting the same old stuff and not one experiencer there. We could have brought extraterrestrials to the table. People who have direct experience with ETs every day, like yourself, or, you know, others. And that's the type of, you know, we're watching this division of people who are still going one way versus the reality going the other way. So this is like very interesting.
I agree with you 100% there, because, you know, I don't want to mention any names, but I know people that are directly funded by, you know, the Rockefellers and people coming out of military intelligences and even major reporting centers and things like that coming straight out of the alphabet agencies. And people think that they're going to give them the truth and tell them what's really going on and things like that. And I've actually watched them ignore, you know, like at the conferences here when we did an intention experiment and a ship flew right over the top of the building with 200 witnesses, you know, or more. You know, things like that were totally ignored. Elk abductions that were seen by 14 tree planters here were moved to different locations. People calling in with sightings in our area are told, tell me when the little green men come out. They're being, you know, and these are like teachers and people of high credentials, things like that. It's just observing this over and over. And I noticed that I'm definitely not invited to a lot of the major UFO conferences, because if you look at the people on the board, a lot of them are card carrying CFR members.
Oh, they are. Yeah. They are. And in that case, I have had actually those people by mistake send me emails in which they were discussing, for example, my being excluded. And I sent it back to them and I said, look what you just sent me, because you sent it by mistake. So, you know, they can't hide anymore.
No, it's their world. Their little dark secrets are being exposed, and they're being exposed for who they are. And I know a lot of people have been calling into various shows and radio shows and saying, yeah, I was up at East City and I saw amazing things, and there's ships all over, and I had big heart openings, and it was amazing contacts and telepathic and energetic connections going on. And you know, and you know, a lot of the hosts are just totally squirming, you know, when that's going on, and they keep trying to change the subject real quick, you know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hilarious watching it, because there's just too many people that know the truth right now. And you know, the people that are, you know, I guess there's a name for them. They call them controlled opposition.
Right.
And so they're still control, but they make it look like they're in opposition to what's going on.
Yes. Well, you know, just kind of taking that as a segue, one of the ways that we've attempted to take the message directly to the public using the new platforms that are available on the internet and to do this worldwide. And we'd like to invite yourself and anyone from the Isetti family to come on board and maybe teach a course here, because it's based on the principle of revenue sharing with the faculty. So this is just a way to reach audiences out there in Europe, in Asia, in South America. We have an academy in Germany that is now coming on as our European partner that will be heading up EXO University Europe. And as of now, our new 2013 classes and new faculty are online at exouniversity.org. And what we've done is to make it as much as possible an open university model, which mm-hmm. means that people from any age or any region of the world can stream these classes at their own pace for their own, you know, personal reasons. And at a time when tuition in an Ivy League college, for example, exceeds $50,000 a year, we've made access to a video class at EXO University the cost of a latte at Starbucks, which is $4.95 for a 60 to 90 minute class. Yeah. So, you know, we've made this extremely friendly, and a lot, many of the key personnel at EXO University are graduates and members of the Isetti family. John Kelly is our director of audiovisual, and people can go there and see what a magnificent job he has done in pulling these classes together. There's a new class that goes up each month, and the courses are in exobiology, the science of life. That's mm-hmm. by William Brown, who's a geneticist, former geneticist from University of Hawaii, now works with Nassim Haramein at the Residence Project. We have Dr. Joseph Mara, who's teaching a course in energy medicine.
Yeah, he's been up here to the ranch.
Yeah, yeah, and so this is something that you know we could be one of yet another organization that could work with you to get your message and the message of the people there out more by putting it in an academic context, but yeah. in a way that the faculty get a substantial percentage of the revenues coming from the students watching their classes. So it's all kind of a self-sustaining cooperative. So, you know, it's like one of these new models, a new cooperative model. We also have Laura Magdalene Eisenhower, President Dwight Eisenhower's great-granddaughter. She's teaching a course on hidden history, the divine feminine. And Jim Nichols is teaching a course on the extraterrestrial political, you know, starting with where the Nazis helped and the Third Reich cooperating with a specific ET race and you know, going through that kind of classical stuff. And Andy Bishago and I are teaching a couple of courses, one on time travel and teleportation, and then Andy's conducting a seminar on the CIA Mars Jump Room, where he and a number of colleagues have, including Barry Satoro, back in the 80s, and a number of other people have were actually part of a teleportation technology that was run by the gray ETs, by a specific civilization of grays that were collaborating with the CIA at that time.
Was that the tall grays or the other ones?
Sorry?
Was that the tall grays? Do you know which species of
Yeah, I'm not sure the specific provenance of them.
Okay.
They may have been the tall grays. There were various different types of grays mixed in to this to this project.
Yeah.
And but i.e. so anyway, people can go there to exouniversity.org and see the various courses. You can take courses at your own pace, and if you decide that, hey, you know, I might as well get some credit for this, you can take all of the classes in a particular course at your own pace. There's a new class that comes out every month, and there'll be a total of 12 classes in each course. And then once you take all of them and you coordinate with the faculty member to either write a paper or do some other kind of a project, you know, depending on what the faculty member says, you get a certificate, you know, that you can put on your wall, and you know, that's you're a graduate of. So for example, if you're a practitioner, well, you have a degree in energy medicine that you've gotten, which not too many educational entities now are really addressing exosciences, psi sciences, and exopolitics. The specific impetus for me to kind of move forward and really get this project off the ground was that a couple of years ago, one of the colleges in the university system here in Vancouver asked me to prepare a complete college curriculum for exopolitics, which I did. And then I met with one of the high-ranking people in the administration there and the former chairman of the department. And they said, oh, you're 10 years ahead of your time. And I could see that I was just dealing with their fears, and because the university system is built to gatekeep and keep this information out. They want the university system worldwide is built to keep the entire human species inside the matrix, except for people who are working for specific military intelligence agencies projects or for specific defense contractors. And and you know, people, there's a lot of moral negatives to many people to do that. So I saw that we had to create our new academic institutions, and this is, you know, a beginning attempt where we're giving the information in an academic context with academic credit. And over the years, I'm sure that we'll be able to go to the education departments and begin to get the accreditation. There's already a university in Bangladesh where you can go get and, you know, become a department in that or come in under one of the departments there. But, you know, so we're in a very rapidly changing world.
Yeah, sign me up. Sounds good. I'd love to do one, you know, and just kind of cover who's who in the universe and interdimensional.
Oh, great, great. You know, James, we would love to do a course with you. And if that's okay, I could have John, you know, contact you. Would that be okay?
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. I mean, we've been working with John for quite a while. And John has hundreds of hours of UFO footage here
because
he's been a trooper. He's been standing out in the field, you know, in the middle of summer and winter, you know, middle of the night with his camera rolling. And he's just got
incredible footage. You know, I think that that's going to be one of the major breakthrough courses that we can offer. And is going to be extremely popular with students from all over the world. Do you know that we get emails that are like this? We get emails from young people in the Middle East saying, "Can we sign up for your courses, or are they only for Americans?"
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah. This is a real opportunity to bring what's happening at USETI to a larger world in an academic context.
Mm-hmm. No, it sounds awesome, and I know I'm not real technologically savvy, but I know with John's help, we could get quite a curriculum together.
Oh yeah.
And put something out there that we could cover UFOs from the beginning, you know, and UFOs in the Bible and UFOs in the ancient history and the religious aspect to it.
Oh, that is going to be such an awesome course. Wow.
Yeah, and take it all the way through to the highest dimension, to the seventh dimensional God beings, you know, if people want to know what's happening, you know, on the other side.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I've been connecting with a lot of scientists, and it's Keshi, right? Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Keshi, I was looking at his work, and it seems like he's bringing Star Trek into reality, you know, where he has the technology for replicators, for growing new limbs. You know, if you lose an arm, you can actually... with the plasma generation technologies and anti-gravity. I'm not sure if he's got counter-gravity, but I know anti-gravity floats things. Counter-gravity propels things like several thousand miles an hour almost instantly. Yeah, it's a little different technology.
Right.
But, I know he's got the answers to most of the world problems right now. The only thing that's missing is the leadership and the education, it seems, you know, to get this out.
Right. Right. Yeah. So this is, you know, it's, I really got the feeling that the positive forces are starting to converge now. And all of us are really starting to come together in a working fashion. So we are converging. Mm-hmm. And it's just at the time that you mentioned that the other side, the dark side, is starting to disassemble itself. So, you know, this is quite a transformational process that is happening. You know, something that I would love to do, for example, as a world teleconference, which we can do at EXO University as part of our audiovisual department, is have, for example, an educational panel with Dr. Keshi there, with yourself and with other people, really beginning to bring this in an academic panel where students are signing up and they're getting credit for it. And just really, you know, normalizing this in the world of learning.
Yeah, I have access to some other scientists, and I won't mention their names because I'd have to talk to them first. But they have just cutting edge healing technologies as well that are just off the charts, and we could put an end to disease, you know, with these new technologies, and clean up the environment too with them as well. It's amazing.
Great
technology. Yeah. So, I mean, even bringing that into the play would be awesome.
Phenomenal. Wow. So this is really a beginning. It's like not the end of the world, but it's the beginning of the world.
I always love that REM song or whatever. It's, it's the end of the world as we know it, but I feel fine, you know?
Yeah.
It just really gets me when I hear those. I play it on the show every once in a while.
Yeah.
We're coming up close to the end of the hour here. So I definitely want to get the contact information out now. So now would the exopolitics.com site be the best one for people to connect with you?
Yeah, sure. Sure. And
that has everything on it.
Yeah. Just go to exopolitics.com and that'll take you everywhere. And exouniversity.org has a lot of courses that you can browse, and then you can take one, you know, if you feel like it.
Yeah, that'd be great. I know John, I'm glad you got him on board because he's just amazing. You know, what he's done here was just incredible.
Well, look, we are definitely going to contact you. And I think that the UFO course coming out of ISETI and Mount Adams will change the world, literally.
Oh, I do too, because there's everything is happening here. We've got the inner earth guys here. We've got the nature kingdom appearing. We've got masters appearing out in the field that are being filmed. Amazing light ships flying over, just blotting out the whole screen, you know, of the cameras. So it's not just one thing. It's bringing all of it together, you know, into unity consciousness, which is where we really should be going.
Tremendous.
But we're hitting the end of the hour here. So is there anything else you want to leave the audience with before we go?
Well, just that, we are really at the beginning of this new era, and to look at all the opportunities just don't think about hazards. Just look at opportunities and look at everything as an opportunity.
Yeah, and face your fears and move forward.
Exactly.
You know, with it. Well, you know, Alfred, I can't thank you enough. It's always a delight to talk with you and inform
us. Thank you. Likewise.
And we'll have to get you back on again because I know we just touched the tip of the iceberg here on
right.
A big long list of questions. And so we'll do those again at a later date.
Good enough then.
All right. Thanks for coming on the show. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right, we're coming into the second hour here, and we've got a great second hour for you. We've got Spencer and Nate who have been working very diligently on all kinds of projects to inform people, empower people, and help people stand in their own self-authority, wake up as to the law and the true law, you know, what's really going on and how we can step around this other this fictional law we've been having to deal with for so long, which is a story in itself. And you can go ahead and ask questions if you want. Let me give you the call-in numbers if you want to ask some questions about what's unfolding and how to really learn how to stand in your own self-authority, your own power in these times, because. You know, right now, the world's pretty much imploding financially, and a lot of people have lost their jobs, their homes. They've got nowhere to go. They're being harassed and tickets and you name it, you know, all kinds of problems, and they just don't know where to go or how to deal with it. And there's just a massive bottleneck because there's so much of this going on. So it's a real breath of fresh air to listen to Nate and Spencer. And so we're going to turn it over to them and bring them on the air. And hopefully we can get them hooked in right away. But anyway, those numbers are 888-627-6008, 530-327-7602, and 530-413-4522. And you can go ahead and get it off the website as well. And I think we've got Spencer on the line to take over. Spencer, are you with us?
I'm right here, James.
All right, Nate with you?
Yeah, what's up, James?
Hey, well, I'm going to turn the show over to you guys, and so take it away and go whichever direction you want to go, because I know there's a lot of people, in some pretty interesting predicaments right now and trying to figure a way out.
I was hoping you'd give us a little better setup. which direction are we going here?
We're going north, south, east, and west, all at the same time.
Cover it all, huh?
Okay. Are you ready? You got something?
No, go ahead.
All right, let's set this up off of something that Alfred was just talking about, right? You guys are ending the show talking about let's see everything as an opportunity. And to me, that's just another way of saying, okay, well, let's take another look at a situation that we might think at first glance is negative. And just a way of reframing our perspective. And that's something that Spence and I have spent a lot of time talking about or contemplating. And what comes to mind, I know Spencer has a great story that kind of dovetails into that.
Uh-huh.
About the gym story.
No.
Yeah, dude. The gym story kind of ties into that, dude.
GYM.
Yeah.
All right.
Right? And yeah. Because you'll explain it afterwards what the lesson is in it.
Yeah.
But I think it's an important, and it's a relevant story for any of us, because we've all been in a situation like it. So I've said enough. I think I've set you up. Can you take it from there, Spence?
Yeah, I can take it from here. I can take this private story that I've shared personally with Nate and put it on the radio. When I was in junior high, I was in seventh grade after school wrestling program. And there's a world of difference between the seventh graders and the eighth graders. And I was in this first day of class and I was definitely feeling that I was in over my head, all these older kids and way out of my element and all this kind of stuff. And I was a little spooked and a little overzealous in everything I did. And as the coach was barking out the various drills that we were supposed to do, you know, you drop down to the floor and you do the push-ups and you flip over and you do the sit-ups. And he said sprint, and I took off running. I bolted out of there for two reasons. And the first is I was closest to the door and I didn't want to get run over. And after a painful amount of time, I looked around and I was the only guy that left the gym. Everybody else was running in place. And so I had to go back to the gym by myself. And it was one of the longest walks of my life. And I thought, well, wait a minute. If I go back there, and it, first of all, it is funny. And so if I go back with my tail between my legs, I kind of make that situation. And if I go back and I think it's as funny as everybody else is, and my attitude is kind of like, what do? It's pretty funny stuff. And, you know, you just move on. It will probably be that way. But if I go back embarrassed, I kind of create that. I create the scenario myself where it's a painfully embarrassing situation. And so the lesson that I got out of it is, regardless of how the train wreck happened, you always have the option of what to make out of it when it's done. So that's something that came up at a point in time when, I don't know, Nate and I were probably talking about something that was a difficult situation at the time. And I brought that up. Didn't know it was going to happen twice.
I'm pretty sure you shared it with that story with other people. But yeah, the point being on it that you projected the meaning onto it, and that it was that you had the opportunity to have a role in the creation of what the outcome was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it, you know, it's a valuable thing to, okay, how does that lesson apply to my life in all sorts of situations that we might encounter? And a lot of times when we're talking about this stuff, we're making the connection of, okay, how would we use this idea or lesson in a legal proceeding or in some sort of situation with authority, but it's bigger than just that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. It's bigger than junior high. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's it sort of opportunity presents itself probably sooner than a lot of people are ready to embrace it.
Wow.
Right. I mean, you know, when somebody else said, you guys were talking about the banking world and that situation collapsing, and I don't know necessarily that that's entirely a bad thing, because I don't know necessarily what is collapsing. And if what is collapsing is the control system behind the system, that's all right. To crash the system, it is different than who's at the steering wheel. So, in following money and looking into that kind of thing, I don't think that's a bad thing at all. People individually across the country and across the world have been looking into and studying deeply the nature and character of banking and who's really in control and how money's produced and where it comes from. And people realize individually that it's their own credit that currency springs from. Lots of people have really been embracing the fact that the system's crashing. No fear whatsoever once you really understand what's going on. So there's another opportunity that can be turned 180. Nate, you got...
Is James still there in the background? Did he really just turn it over to
us? I think he just turned it over to us. Rich is on Colorado, line one.
Oh, he is?
Yeah. Oh, hey, how's it going, guys?
Oh, hey.
Hey, yeah, I was just going to kind of chime in here. I, you know, I'm going through a pretty huge transition in my life, but, you know, a long time ago, I'd say about 4 years ago, began the transition where I just stripped everything in my life that was just holding me back from peace and got out of the corporate rat race and simplified, kind of sold everything, took my family up into the mountains, and we just did the hermit thing, you know, started tilling the soil and growing our own food and just trying to get back to basics, reconnect with nature. And, you know, the other day, January 8th, I was driving home from an appointment because I sell musical products at this point. I do it independently. And had a guy rear-end me and totaled my car, sandwiched me into a car in front of me. And, you know, it's one of those things where you look at it on the outset that it's this terrible set of circumstances and it's caused me a ton of stress and just a ton of just, you know, really not being there for my family. But, you know, just the last couple of days, I've really been able to see how it's playing into, once again, changing the direction of my life. And it's causing me to realize I got to get off the mountain and I got to get back out and kind of help people see how to heal themselves and see what I've learned over these last few years. Cause I think going through that accident, somehow there was just a bubble of protection on me and I should have been hurt way worse than I was. And I knew how to just get right back to my center. And, it's been one of those things where I also have realized that I went through it for a reason, and I know that there's just this new transition coming where everything's going to change. So I'm not going to buy another vehicle, you know? I'm not going to keep doing things even the way I was with my job. I'm going to figure out how to give myself more to humanity and put myself more into just lifting other people up. And it's just amazing how crazy traumatic things like that, if you're patient enough and you just give it a little bit of time, all of a sudden you start seeing this silver lining where you go, wow, you know, if that wouldn't have happened, I would have just kind of kept in the cycle and not looked at my life and looked at what I wanted to change. And I guess as a result of that accident, I just looked at that I don't need to do the hermit thing as much and just hide from society. Because, you know, there's just a lot of things going out there that can cause you to be fearful and really not want to engage. But I don't really know how I'm doing my part in following my soul journey by doing that. So that's kind of my just little input on always trying to look at the positive and look at the best part of any situation that you're in. And, you know, that may be a small situation compared to what some people are dealing with, you know, people with cancer or all these different things. But, you know, that's another thing. I had terrible digestive issues when I started the journey 4 years ago. It forced me to look at health and how to heal my body. So if I hadn't gone through that, then I would have never figured out how to heal myself. And now I feel like for people that are open, I can help them get over issues if they really want to dig in deep and find out what works for them and take advice from me and others and people that are willing to look at it from a holistic viewpoint and go back to nature and not deal with the whole pharmaceutical system and the doctors mm-hmm. that basically just want to take them for their money. But, yeah, I don't know. I was hearing what you guys were saying, and I figured I'd call in and just kind of give my two cents on the whole deal.
Thanks for sharing, brother.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Yeah, you bet. You know, have a great night.
That kind of brings up, there's a fairly famous Chinese proverb about Sei Wang's lost horse. And it's a story that flip-flops continually. And the guy lost, he raised a horse and he lost one. And somebody up and was talking to him about this lost horse. And then he says, well, you know, maybe it wasn't such a thing to lose because it was a bad horse. And then after a while it returned, and when it came back, it brought back a better one. And then the same guy that he was talking to the first time that said, man, that was such a bad thing. The neighbor said, hey, what a great thing that this new horse showed up. And then Sei Wang says, well, maybe not. Hold on. You know, story's not over yet. And maybe it's not such a good thing. And so his son liked the new horse and took off riding and he fell off and broke his leg. And same guy that's been kind of making comments on it, he says, man, that's terrible. And the guy says, well, I don't know. Hold on. And because of the broken leg, now he can't go off to war. And it's not intended to be anything even close to a real story. But, you know, now everybody's going off and dying at war. And now this kid's got a busted leg and couldn't go anywhere. And so it's kind of a proverb that illustrates that things are always unfolding, changing at every turn in the road. It might be too soon to jump to conclusions. So anyway, something to think about. It kind of probably, I don't know how old this thing is, but it's fairly time-honored thing.
Interesting.
Yeah. What else we got? Any other calls?
I don't know, man. We should holler out to Dave Lambert if he's listening out there and put some pressure on him to call in.
Yeah. He's always good for comments, isn't he? What else do we got to go with this? James really just turned it over to us, didn't he?
He didn't tell us that's what.
Here we are. Maybe that's not such a bad.
We got David on line three. Check him out, dude.
Maybe that's not such a bad thing.
Maybe that's not such a bad thing.
You guys hearing me okay?
We hear you just fine.
Oh, great.
What's going on?
Well, I thought I'd call in. Are you guys going to talk about Divine Providence at all?
It had been talked about. The Divine Providence.
Okay. Yes, we could do a little brief thing on Divine Providence, but before we do, Spence, would you talk about the concept that everything goes back to being in trust?
Sure.
Right? Okay, so that in the beginning, man is given dominion over the earth by God, right? But it's we're not to own it. We just have a divine right of use.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I don't know if other people are familiar with that sort of concept. Lay that out.
Well, I'm not very, very versed in scriptural theology, but I do know that there's a phrase in there that is, that the land shall not be bought and sold forever. Because it's mine. Yeah, so that there's always a trust issue going on. I think people would be surprised how often a trust shows up, a trust as in a thing, not trust as in an action or a verb. A trust being a grantor and a beneficiary with a trustee over an asset. And a lot of times there can be a resulting trust. Resulting trust would be if someone wants you to go to the store and they give you $20 to go get whatever groceries and then deliver it somewhere. That's a resulting trust, and a lot of people wouldn't know that. But the grantor would be whoever provided the $20, and the asset is the groceries, and the beneficiary is whoever it's going to be delivered to. And then if you're doing the delivery, you're the trustee. And those situations happening all the time and unfolding, and they're not express trusts. They're not like grandma gave you $20,000 to be used under certain circumstances. Those are express trusts, and they work the same way, but they have the same principles as the resulting trust. So maybe there's a little setup for this making a distinction between express
and implied.
And implied, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and so how were you thinking about tying that into setting up for the divine providence?
Well, because if we're talking about new administration of the estates and of the reality and potential for every living soul that is on this planet, really is a living beneficiary,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
But
right.
Give an explanation on what that means and how is it that we are living beneficiaries, and that most people don't realize that that's their capacity.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I would say even if we want to go down that path, we could take that's something that's maybe a little bit more abstract, and we can take it to something that's concrete and very specific, is that when birth certificates are issued, that birth certificate ends up in Treasury, and it is a specific financial tool and currency tool. And that is maybe not, that might even be a hybrid between an express and an implied trust, because I don't know that much about the Sesta K Trust. But to
break this down into the most simplest kind of form for people who haven't really been looking into that specific line of a pool of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and so maybe the divine province as something loosely known as an organization is.
Well, here, let me I'll read you out of the book, the Divine Providence book that James McBride just did and released with Ed Bryken. So they describe the divine estate and the divine province as being akin to a separate divine territory that's totally outside of the jurisdiction of whatever, of the planet Earth.
How about
civil system, we could say, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And that it's outside of those laws thusly imposed on the straw man, or however else we want to describe that. Mm-hmm.
The person, actually.
The person.
As opposed to people.
Mm-hmm. And so, and the way they were able to do that was basically by this papal seal and this postal union that they did. There's more information about that on thedivineprovince.org. If people want to know about it, I'd suggest that they check that out. So Dave, man, you were there. What is your impression of it, or what questions, or what do you have to say about that?
Well, one of the things that's come up recently with trust, since we started with trust, is that the one people's public trust has started this campaign, this opt-in campaign.
Yeah.
And have either of you looked at the literature and the implications of that at all? Because
I know that's something that I need to look deeper into. I've just started to scratch the surface on it, but that's another highly interesting and dovetails. There's some similarities going on there to what James did.
It sounded like they had filed a challenge on some sort of public trust with a larger legal organization, like a UCC, like a filing of some sort. So apparently there's a trust, and they made a challenge for this trust. And because that wasn't challenged, they defaulted. And so the trust of the planet falls to all of us, and we become responsible for it. So they have this opt-in campaign to get people to read the literature and to understand that they're a part of this.
I didn't know it was that organized.
Yeah, dude, I've mentioned it to Spence that, hey, dude, there looks like there's some real interesting momentum going on with that. We need to check that out. We've both been so busy with, mm-hmm. our individual projects and other stuff. But I know that. Who did you listen to, dude? Have you heard? Lisa. Like, I know Lisa and Santos have talked with those people.
Right, Lisa Harrison. Well, I shouldn't say she started. That's where I found out about it. She didn't start
that's
it.
Right. We're supposed to talk to her at some point about that stuff, man.
The Australian gal that has a radio show, right?
Yeah, she was at the conference in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. Right, she was the Aussies we had breakfast with.
Yeah.
Remember the Australian gal?
Yeah. You know, so, to come. Oh, go ahead, Dave.
Well, I was just going to say, I thought it was interesting because we started with trust, and I found out about this 2 weeks ago, and I wasn't able to dive into it till this week, and I've only scratched the surface. Honestly, I feel like I haven't done them justice, but it was really interesting because they're essentially claiming rights to the trust mm-hmm. for humanity and the earth. It's like the earth is bequeathed by the creator, and so humanity now is taking this trust on instead of the crown, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
Or the Vatican. And I think it was the Vatican in the 13th century that first proclaimed they had ownership of this trust.
Well, I think, and also this Cesta KV Trust probably really started getting kicked into high gear, I thought, in the mid-1600s, where the people got converted into persons, and they were presumed to be a dead entity unless they rebutted it within 7 years. And so the legal name was transferred as and intended to be understood in formal venues, when you're using the name with, governmental entities, right? That's what they presumed to preside over, rule over, that kind of thing. And, if this goes too fast and too far over somebody's head that would just listen into this thing, there's a concept of the right of self-determination. And it's a concept that's well understood within the folks that, are in the administrative level at the United Nations, the right of self-determination. And so one of the things that when most people would consider of what nationality are you, I would say the vast majority of people would only consider certain nations that already exist. Because it seems like a fairly daunting, unapproachable concept. But a nation is merely a society. And a society can be any number of people. There's no limit to it. And so one is a number. And there are many people that have understood that if you just want to, seriously, if you just want to be your own society, you have the right of self-determination, and you don't have to opt in specifically into an organization that already exists. You can just create your own. And that's how the ones that exist now, they had to be created somewhere. And that's a
constant. I couldn't agree more. It's always been true. It's always been true.
Yep.
In a fashion, though, this trust, you know, just the momentum and the education involved in it, it seems like it's designed in such a fashion that people take on that sovereignty and take on the responsibility of the trust, because it is a responsibility.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, you know, maybe if you were going to tackle something like this, how would you imagine what sort of pieces would need to be done to accomplish something like this?
Well, I think it would probably.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, you would have to at least maybe start with a big enough, broad enough, high enough view to understand that there's a difference between international law and local statutes, and maybe what that was. In the international law, it is how nations interact with each other, and that's a completely different thought process. It's not any more complicated, but it's just most folks only concern themselves with wrapping their mind around local codes and customs, whether it's United States code or local statutory codes and regulations and bylaws and ordinances and things, which concerns themselves with, you know, whether or not how fast your car is going or if you have a seatbelt and when you can talk on your cell phone. Really small view stuff. And it's internationalized, no more complicated, but you have to be aware of it and where it fits in the nature of things. That's probably a place to start, is just to kind of maybe attempt to see something with a little bigger view.
Okay.
What, did you have anything else in mind? Did that thought surprise you?
No. You know, I hadn't actually planned on talking about the One People's Public Trust. It just struck me when Nate started this conversation with trust, that it really sort of tied into what Divine Providence in essence is trying to do as well, and that, you know, get people to stand up for themselves and recognize their own divine sovereignty.
Dude, that, you know, there's such a momentum going on with people wanting to achieve greater freedom and just greater
independence
and take, you know, be able to take responsibility for themselves and create more peace and harmony in their lives. And people, you know, of all different walks are coming up with all these different approaches. I think that we're going to see a landslide of different remedies that people are going to be utilizing successfully.
Is the one People's Trust, is that, did that originate down in Australia? Is that Australian-centric?
No, I don't think so.
You know what? I think they may have filed paperwork in Australia.
Really? Yeah. I shouldn't even speak about it, because I don't know enough.
I don't either, but here was my point, is that I know of a pretty solid grassroots movement in Canada and a completely separate one over in the UK and England. And so I don't even know what those guys have going on, but everybody's kind of coming at the same focal point from different directions, mm-hmm. and which is completely unrelated to some of the stuff going on in Canada. And England's really got a solid base of folks that have a good idea of what's going on without people having just opinions about this, hearing what someone else says and trying to decide, yeah, that's something I believe, or no, it's not. Here's what I'm saying is that they've gone out and done their own independent research and have knowledge of this information and not just opinions based on what they've heard. And that is substantial over in England. Maybe right now in small pockets, but, and so then now here's something this one people's trust sounds like, if that's something that's really gone fairly substantial down in Australia, it's like there's another one too. I know down in Australia, there's a guy, his name is Mark McMurtry, and that guy is super solid about knowing this kind of stuff. And he kind of comes at it from an Aboriginal point of view too.
Hmm.
And I have no idea if he's affiliated or not with the One People's Trust. I would be surprised because he's just so, he's just
but
got
he, things is so, he from Australia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's something else too about a way to look at. I think this concept of sovereignty confuses people, especially when they get a first look at the concept, or their first brush is a lot of the disinformation and misinformation that's put out on that concept of sovereign citizen. And so the word sovereign means no higher authority. And so. It's not something to achieve. The irony in this is we always had that and we give it up by filling out, by submitting applications and submitting registrations and the fine print and the words and the concepts that are in all those documents that people fill out either for tax purposes or for seeking permission to do something, whether it's a business license or a driver's license or a fishing license or a marriage license.
Right.
People have no idea.
Yeah, you covered that pretty well in your other conversations. There's, you know, anybody listening in should definitely, you know, to find out more about that, should dive into some of those earlier conversations you've had with Nate.
Mm-hmm. My point is it's sovereignty isn't something to achieve. It's something you always had and gave up.
I agree.
So, and I think that's something that takes several coats of paint in people's minds, figuratively speaking. It takes hearing that several different ways and thinking about it. And I think for a lot of people, the concept's just unapproachable. You just always know and believe that somebody else has.
I've got to get permission from somebody.
Right.
Somebody else will tell me how to do this.
Right. Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. I love that phrase when you use that. Several coats of paint. You know, I've heard Nate repeat it as well. And maybe you just elaborate a little bit on that for other people because I think it's something that you go viral.
Yeah, you know, a lot of these concepts take revisiting them in your mind several times, and that. That exact phrase one time, I was explaining something to somebody one time, and I know for sure that I had told them two or three times before, but I wasn't too exasperated on it, and I think they kind of maybe overly apologized because I was telling them again. And so my reply was, no, that's okay. Sometimes to sort of, if you've painted a picture in your mind of something and it's not quite right, or it's based on misinformation, or it's just it's not based on solid enough information, so you just sort of guess at it. And a lot of that stuff is maybe, give you an example, is where does a court get its jurisdiction and authority? And I would be shocked if more than one person out of 100 understood the concept of jurisdiction. Most people would say a court has jurisdiction. It just has its jurisdiction. And so if you were to explain jurisdiction to someone at a court level, you know, specifically within that context, it would probably take many explanations, probably substantially the same before it started to sink in. And that's kind of what I mean by those lots of coats of paint, is if you've had a presumptive picture or image in your mind of something and it needs to be corrected, a lot of times you're not just going to get it at one explanation.
And the other point that I see in it, too, is that, like, when you do coats of paint, mm-hmm. it takes time.
Yeah.
You let one dry, and yeah. then you come back and you do another one.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that might be over the course of a couple of days, and in the metaphorically speaking, it may be...
Who knows?
Who knows? It's a continuous process, but... Yeah.
Triangulate it in your mind and to re-see that new view and to think about it, roll it around in your mind and compare it to other truths that you might know.
Absolutely.
As part of that
and
drawing
then,
process.
And then letting go of our old ways of thinking of stuff, too, is built into it as well.
Yeah, yeah. All that,
and that takes time.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I mean,
in a large part,
I probably have had... the pleasure and privilege of talking with Spence, I don't know, maybe, you know, for hours and hours, and our girlfriends are laughing and joking at us that, you know, whatever, we won't stop talking, but we have, why? That's true. But, I've heard and I've learned a ton from our discussion, Spence, and I've totally seen that. Like, I've rewatched your videos that I was there at the presentation. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I know I've heard Spence say this to me over and over and over again, but not until time had gone by and I've just been evolving that finally, like, oh, I heard you say this. I know I've heard you say it before, but now I'm in a position to perceive it differently.
Mm-hmm. I actually did something on what I call micro due process, and there was an attorney that had seen that video, and they told me they had seen it, and they kind of nodded and smiled, just very polite about it, and I didn't think much of it that they had seen it. In other words, I wasn't concerned one way or the other about their opinion, and I kind of forgot about it. And they got a hold of me about 6 months after they had seen it, and their only point in the conversation was, "Oh my God, I get what you're saying now. I get it." And so all I'm saying is that if you have a certain view, it doesn't. I'm not speaking maybe towards the education level, but it takes a while to maybe create another picture with context to see that. See, lots of attorneys. Start. Their step one is to presume that they have authority and jurisdiction. Now it's just, what do you do with it? And as some of the folks start to learn a little bit about this stuff and see that, hey, wait a minute, maybe there's a little something, this jurisdiction issue, they would challenge an attorney on that. And sometimes a conventional bar attorney will be absolutely indignant, thinking that it's a foregone conclusion, and they can be as profoundly wrong on occasion, and proven that way. Should we give out the calling numbers, Nate?
Well, Dave's still there, man.
Okay,
is he?
Yeah, I'm here. Dave's here, man.
Dave's here, man. So Dave, man, I mean, you've been kind of by necessity had to jump into a process of learning about some of this stuff and going in and having some court experiences on your own.
Huh.
You know, what sort of evolution in your process of having coats of paint build up have you experienced?
Well, it's surprised me how well I thought I knew something. Like, I would get a concept almost immediately from Spence, like the nature of money, just some aspect of it, because that's a broad subject. Then only to turn around and find that I really was still thinking about things in the old paradigm, even though I'd had this realization, I was still sort of counting my eggs in the same old fashion. And so, you know, the coats of paint thing I thought was important for us to bring up because it's really taken that for me. And I don't know if I'm just extraordinarily dense, which is a possibility, as you guys both probably know. But I feel like, you know, the motivator for me has really been just on my own part, you know. I know what the truth is. I can see it, you know, when it comes to my situation and the courts and everything that I've had to do in my situation with my house has really sort of taken my mind and driven it in ways that I wouldn't have otherwise I wouldn't have otherwise taken this on, you know. My life, I had other interests, and just being sort of pissed off and staring at the truth too long, it really motivated me to, like, you know, there's an opportunity for me to not only learn something but make a difference here. And it's a special gift. You know, I have to own up to it and do my best with it. If any of that makes sense.
Oh, man.
Yeah. A lot of this stuff bleeds over into other, you gain a lesson in one place and it bleeds over into other areas too. Mm-hmm.
You know, the time that I spent at East SETI really helped me figure a lot of things out. You know, most people that are probably listening tonight have been around the ranch and heard Spence multiple times and have maybe run across me if they've been there. They know this wasn't where I started, and you know, if I hadn't run into Spence, I'd probably already be out of my house and you know, licking my wounds a long time ago. And at least now I feel like you know, I've made an effort, and I have a great opportunity to stomp the living shit out of some people.
I don't know if we need to take it that far. You got to start on high ground in order to pull that off.
Yeah. Well, and what higher ground is there?
Yeah. And here's something else too, is ultimately, if you haven't seen success maybe measured in 100% airtight way, I would say that you've seen some milestone success in attempting to stand your own ground in a way that's played by the rules too, haven't you?
Oh, I have, absolutely. You know, each time I go to court, I get a little win. And I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be fooling myself into thinking I'm always going to win in court, but it's encouraging, you know, the incremental little, yep, I stood my ground there and I got what I wanted.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's just an extra 50 days or getting somebody else dismissed or et cetera, I've made progress.
Yeah.
You know, I find one of the things that I actually wanted to ask Nate, because this is what's been happening to me lately, fellas, is that I've been having these sort of visions and plays going off in my head about court and what's going to happen. And my mind goes through these little scenarios, as you probably know.
Yeah.
And lately the context and my strategies and my just the way I'm pursuing these visions and these mental masturbations, if you will, is the tone has taken on a lot more aggressive fashion for me. I feel like I'm running through the right mental hoops. You know, I don't want to go in, you know, without you know, having a certain amount of forthrightness, you know. And I'm just wondering if Nate went through that himself, the closer he got to you know, some of the proceedings that he's gone through.
Yeah, man. I mean,
let me jump in here just quick. I told Nate a story today about you, Dave, and I told him that I'd sent you a video clip. And is that one of the coats of paint here that applies, is to kind of, we don't just go in completely submissively seeing if you could ask, but to change a different approach and to say, hey, without being belligerent, but just saying, hey, this is where I stand, this is what I ask, do you have a reason why that shouldn't be done, rather than going in and say, what may I have?
Exactly.
That clip helped?
Well, I'm not sure I've seen the one you're talking about.
I sent you the...
Maybe you could... Just sent a little you bit more on it.
I sent you that clip of Charlie Murphy talking about protecting his little brother.
Oh, Charlie Murphy, yeah. You know, I owe that dude a big favor. He was a motivator. You know, at the time I was like, God, this guy's hilarious. He must have driven his brother Eddie mad, but, you know, his heart was in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you know, I wasn't getting the larger context and why you sent that to me. It was sort of motivation, you know, to get my head around the fact that I've got some skin in the game and I need to be, like, a bit of a bulldog about that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know, since I watched Charlie Murphy, you know, I feel like, yeah, that's absolutely helped me. I'm you know, neither of you know this, but I'm trying to get my son to move into the house right now. You know, one of my bigger motivators was that if I could win this house, you know, maybe I could let my grandkids grow up there in some fashion. I think that would be just awesome, you know, because, you know, I only really got the house from my dad, you know, as a bit of an inheritance for my brothers and sisters. We all grew up there. We all moved away and came back. And, you know, we all raised our kids for even short amounts of time. I raised them there for 2 years. They loved that house. So there's been like a large Lambert clan, a large amount of us have all grown up there. And I think it would just be great if that extended for another generation. And the only way that's even ever going to happen is if I stand my ground and make some effort. And mm-hmm. so I'm trying to move my son in there so that he can at least see his child, my grandson. And that's kind of a long, tangenting conversation that I won't get into tonight. But if I can get him in there, I just feel like, yeah, I've definitely got some motivation to keep this house in my life. And, you know, everybody should, you know, if they're, damn it, you know, the fraud that's taking place in the housing market is hitting people really in the crotch. You know, that's the American dream, and it's being stolen from people. And, it was fraud from the beginning, and that's the thing that, you know, I think most pissed me off about Spencer when I met him is that he showed me that. And I, you know, in all honesty, you know, it wasn't an easy pill to swallow, that red pill, when you have to realize that you've done business with people that have just, they've not only defrauded you, but they've defrauded your family, and and just for generations, this shit's been going on, and it's just to the pale now. How incessant this corruption's gotten.
You know, I think that's one of the more underestimated points of that scene in The Matrix, when Morpheus and Neo are talking about whether the blue pill and the red pill. The underestimated point of Morpheus wasn't just ready to regurgitate truth to him.
Mm-hmm.
He
he had to provide something where Neo had to go out of his way to ask for it. He had to ask for the truth. You can't just go giving it to somebody that's not ready. Yeah, and that was a little bit of what that scene is saying. To say, look, you have two choices here, and you have to go out of your way to get some truth, and you have to do this task. And if you don't want to, and you just want to go back to sleep, you can wake up tomorrow and believe whatever it is you want to believe. But if you want the truth, you got to go out of your way. You got to come to me.
So,
yep, absolutely.
Hey, we got Michael from Washington online for it.
We get the last 10 minutes.
Cool. Well, it's been great chatting with you guys.
Okay.
Hey, this is Michael. I was at the convention there this last June, July.
Michael, you have an epic beard. Do you not?
Yeah, Grizzly Adams kind of guy. Yeah.
Yeah, man, I recognize you. How you doing, brother?
I do too. I remember.
I'm doing good. I'm currently I'm in this housing thing that you're talking about. This is affecting me because I inherited a house from my mother. And I haven't been able to pay on it or anything, but I decided that I'm going to stand tall in the house and force them to prove that they have the legal documents that gives them the legal right to actually prosecute a foreclosure. And I guess I kind of know where I stand. I'm pretty sure that they don't have the original documents, you know, deed of trust and note. But now they're actually in the process. I've got 20 days to get an attorney and stop it. So I guess I was just kind of calling to get your, pick your brains on the, original deed and note as being a requirement to prosecute a foreclosure. And if they don't have it, they're committing fraud. And that's kind of where I'm at. Maybe if you guys want to give me a couple prayers, I guess I'll go in Monday and see an attorney about this whole thing.
Yeah, or we could, we probably have less than 10 minutes here. And I would maybe like to see what you think of this. I just take that into a segue and talk as briefly as I can, and maybe if we did some emails back and forth on the side, we can.
Okay, that'd be fine. The email thing would be fine.
Yeah, because in this case, to really rough something out might take a couple 3 hours, for this specific thing, and I just kind of like to, if we could do that, I would like to take this opportunity to do a segue over into titles and deeds just for a second. I know it's kind of nuts and bolts and 3D, and it's not right dead center of, a lot of what gets talked about on As You Wish, but, if we're here and now, let's...
Okay, but most people think, hey, I own my home, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
But they've never accepted the deed.
Right, yeah. Well, I want to reel back as far as title.
Okay.
I would say, just as a guess, if you asked someone, what is title, we're asking the Greek chorus here, just the average guy, they would probably have a difficult time even venturing a guess. And title would probably most likely come down to a paper document that someone could hold and physically demonstrate as documentation for a separate piece of property. And I would say that's not nearly accurate enough, and that the mortgage industry, takes advantage of this. And so title is the right to own something, and just right out of the gate, title is split at least into equity and legal. So there's a legal title and there's an equitable title. And then of the equitable title, that half is what's being disputed between a bank and the home occupant, the homeowner. And so
right.
Title is a way or means to own something. It's not the paper. And the paper that represents it is the deed. And there's two deeds going on with a mortgage. One side is typically something either a statutory deed or a warranty deed, kind of a couple different words for the same thing. And the deed that's on the banker's behalf is the trustee's deed. And so here is something that I was, I don't know why I was shocked about this, but I was. When I found out that the warranty deeds do not have acknowledgments on them, they're not acknowledged. And so when the buyer strikes up a deal, he never acknowledges that deed. And when I started digging into trustee's deed or the deed on behalf of the bank, sure enough, those deeds, as far as everything that I've seen and witnessed, have been flawless in terms of always having an acknowledgement. And I thought, man, the bankers do it right on the deeds that they're concerned about for their interest.
They do it.
They do an acknowledgement.
And then the one that the supposed homeowner
does not have an acknowledgement, and that means something substantial to a county recorder, and it makes a difference as to whether or not the current owner is on the abstract of title. And that's probably a little bit too much to get into, but
The county auditor, I'm listed as the owner of the house as far as their records.
You are. That surprises me.
There's no bank listed with my name, but uh-huh. The banks have been attempting to pay my property taxes still.
Yeah. Property tax is an element to title. Yeah. That's one of the ways that we find out who really the owner is as well. Who's been paying the taxes on it? Sure enough. 7 years is usually the standard on that. Somebody paid the taxes for 7 years. That can be a standard to look at as far as splitting up, when there's a quiet title situation. I probably am a little too curious into this nuts and bolts thing. To maybe that's a little bit big for this. Do you have a way to maybe email the ranch or someone directly, or you want to email me?
I've actually got all the documents scanned and everything. I can actually email you. I can email anybody anything.
Well, how about we just
maybe that's what I need to do.
Start with a little conversation. You want to?
Okay.
Do you have my email?
Is it at something@eastetti.org?
No. No, it's a Gmail.
And I don't have it.
It's a Gmail account. If I give it to you, you want it? It's salty. Sure. Drift.
Or do you want mine?
Well, how about I just give you mine, and if conversation ensues, there we go. Because I think we have do we have somebody else on here too.
No, but we're basically at the end of the hour here.
Right. Okay.
So Spence is at Salty Driftwood.
Yeah.
Right? At Gmail.
Salty Driftwood?
Yep. At gmail.com. And if anybody else that's listening is interested in reviewing some of Spencer's videos, then there's an archive of those all over at some sort of radicalnewtherapy.wordpress.com.
I thought it was just radical new therapy.
Is it?
Yeah, radical new therapy.
Yeah.
Okay, radical, yeah, I guess it is.
So is this accurate? Do I have the accurate email address, saltydriftwood@gmail?
Yep. That's it.
Okay, well, I'll email you, and then we can take it from there.
Okay.
Cool.
All right, thanks for the call.
I appreciate you guys talking to me.
Yeah.
Right on, brother. Well, wishing you all the luck with your remedy and your situation, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool.
Thank you.
My prayers are with you, Michael.
All right. Well, I hope if I get a private invitation, I hope to be down there this summer, too. Anyway, there you
awesome.
Go.
Awesome. Yeah, cool, man. You can just contact me over at eastetireservations@gmail.com and be happy to have a conversation with you about setting something up.
Okay, then. I thank you.
Cool.
Cheers.
Cheers, man. Wait a minute. So is Dave still there in the background?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, hey.
So I'm going to log off as well, my brothers, and leave you to the end of it. Thank you very much for your time.
Ready. All right. Peace, Dave. Huh. Hey, so real quick, I guess, before we round out the show, I didn't really even comment on Dave's question. Real quick, I'll say that he was asking me if I've gone back and forth in my mind with dealing with this stuff. And sure, absolutely, man. I mean, it's part of the learning curve of like doubting yourself and then getting overconfident and turning the knob up too high in your mind of thinking of how you're going to deal with a situation. And sometimes it's really aggressive, and then other times you're way too weak, and we're, you know, that's how things go. We're trying to shoot for the middle. We're trying to shoot for balance and harmony. Anyway, I guess we'll sign off here. Spence, do you got anything else that you want to throw out there at the end?
Yeah, there's always a remedy. If you have a problem and you're actually standing on high ground, you have a reason for what you're saying. There's always a remedy. If you just want something and want to use conflict to resolve it, there's not always a remedy. There's not always a loophole. But if you're on solid ground, there's always a way to present that. Always. You might not have the skill, but it's there to be had. There to be had.
Let's go get some.
Yep.
All right, well, cool. So that's As You Wish for this evening. And signing off and wishing greater levels of personal freedom and harmony and peace to all of our brothers and sisters across the planet, within the inner Earth, and off the planet. So, peace to you, everybody out there. We'll catch you next time.